How would you like to thrive during menopause? Irene McCormick will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Irene is she's the menopause mentor, an award-winning fitness professional, educator, and author specializing in the science and lived experience of hormones and menopause. And she is the 2018 IDEA Fitness Instructor of the Year and a top three fitness industry contributor at IDEA China 2018, multi-award winning fitness educator, published author, fitness consultant, content expert, keynote speaker, and there's so many more accolades that we could talk about. Now, how can a woman thrive during menopause?
Heal podcast with Lily Petrescu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
Well, I absolutely believe that in order for a woman to be able to, and thank you so much for having me. I'm so pleased, Lily, to be with you. Women in perimenopause, I like to use that word as opposed to menopause. You know why? It's a lot more inclusive. There are so many women in perimenopause, they don't know they're in perimenopause. And because the system, with respect to women's education, we've been gaslighted and ignored and kind of pushed aside for a really long time. No disrespect to anything or anybody, but that's literally been the deal. And that is why so many women are so perplexed and confused during perimenopause and beyond. So I try to approach the topic. First of all, the women are people. So I personally believe in order for me to be successful, I have to have enough confidence to try, okay, based on what I have, and be humble enough to keep learning. And those have been amazingly helpful in trying to elevate other people.
Thank you. So tell us how your journey started and what made you curious about thriving during menopause and perimenopause.
Well, you know what? I actually feel like it's been something that's been in the works for more than 30 years, unbeknown to me, of course. I am from Southern California, and when I was a high school athlete, I did a lot of training that put me into situations where I had to train a lot and compete significantly. So I found myself at 17 years of age without a menstrual flow, which isn't really typical for women. I mean, we see that, but generally we're going to ask questions like, are you anorexic? Do you have anything going on genetically? Da, da, da. No, no, nothing like that. But for whatever reason, I was able to be thrust into a research study, if you can believe it, at UCLA in Los Angeles. And the lead researcher, now this is like mid early 80s, was a woman named Dr. Carol Otis. I couldn't believe a woman was a researcher. I was blown away. And, you know, obviously I was competitive and, you know, went to college on a scholarship. So, you know, people are like, oh, running, so fun. No, for me, it's work. But I don't do that anymore because when you're in perimenopause and beyond, that type of training is the antithesis of what you want to be doing with respect to unwanted fat gain. So I'm sorry to deviate, but long story short, from that early age, I mean, to now, I've always focused on women's health as a fitness professional, as an exercise physiologist. That's my original training. And I've authored two books, and they're dedicated to women and our unique physiology.
Thank you. So I'm 44 right now, and I think that makes me in perimenopause. And so far, I haven't noticed anything apart from the fact that I have a lot of hair loss, and it may not be obvious right now, but I have extensions, and I have never had extensions before. And also, like, I had a, a I had a really bad haircut in September last year, which kind of forced me to, you know, to have extensions. But aside from that, I did notice big clumps of hair just like falling. And I mean, I suffer from depression for the last few years, and I'm okay now. And I'm wondering, like, what kind of symptoms do perimenopausal women and menopausal women tend to suffer from? And is there anything that can be done to overcome them?
Yes. And yes, so interesting, Lily. You were just describing at least two of the myriad, I'd say at least 20 commonly reported menopause, perimenopausal symptoms. And see, you might not be tying those changes in hair loss to depleted estrogen, because biotin, which is so strongly related to maintaining your hair follicles and growth, is got a relationship with estrogen. Estrogen is all over the place. It is one of the most powerful hormones. And then anxiety and depression, especially if you have a genetic predisposition and or, you know, our lives today lend themselves to PTSD and some of those more unwanted, you know, mental health issues. Yes, I have at least two recent research studies that talk about the relationship between cognition and women in perimenopause and beyond. A few more symptoms: sleep disruptions, not being able to go to sleep, not being able to fall back asleep, waking up at 2:15 a.m. Okay, that is your biggest culprit in unwanted fat gain. And it has to do with cortisol, another hormone disrupted by the fluctuating estrogen levels. So estrogen has, I don't know if you've noticed this yet, Lily, but have you had any issues with your eyesight, dear? Have you had to wear readers or anything? Okay. If that comes upon you all of a sudden, do not be surprised. There are estrogen receptors in your eyeballs. So when you have fluctuating estrogen levels, because when you become, this is a sad word, but it's what the research community uses, ready? Biologically irrelevant. Gosh, doesn't make me feel awesome to say that as a female, but our ability to reproduce completely changes our physiology. And so many women blame themselves for what's going on. It's physiology. It's really non-negotiable. Couple more symptoms: hot flashes and night sweats. They're really the same thing, actually, related to the same gland, which is your hypothalamus gland. Now, children and older adults do not have a great capacity to determine their body's temperatures or thirst. And when we go into the phases of perimenopause and beyond, our hypothalamus gland becomes compromised because estrogen is going away. So now you're going to have a really, really limited ability to manage your body temperature. A night sweat is literally a hot flash that just goes on for longer because you're asleep. So that's why you wake up. When you're in a daytime situation and it's a hot flash, you're going to change your environment as quickly as you possibly can. But they're literally the same thing. But there are so many symptoms. It's so hilarious. This is so funny. I had to make a call to PayPal about my card just a few days ago. And I'm speaking to a woman across the globe. I can tell she has a different accent than me, right? And she saw that my email address was the Menopause Mentor. We talked for about 5 minutes about perimenopause and beyond. I've never met this woman in my life, but women literally need solutions and they need answers. And some of it can come from perhaps hormones, if indeed that's something that women would desire. I do have something to kind of redeem the hormone replacement therapy theory. But there are, you know, there are changes that have to be made. There are certain ways you have to exercise now, and there's certain qualities of your life you're going to have to kind of prioritize that you may not have had to in your 30s or, you know, early 40s, etc.
Thank you. The other thing I noticed is more forgetfulness and also a lack of focus on a certain task. So I feel like I'm a lot more distracted. And the last thing is, like you said, the weight gain. I am currently I think I'm obese, like I'm 85 kilos. And for my height and weight, I should really be like more like 58. I'm not sure if you know kilos, but
Yes,
how much
I
that is
do.
in pounds. I remember when I was younger, I would like walk or I would dance or I would do so many different activities and I would very quickly lose the weight. With this, like I'm eating once a day. And I am not noticing like anything different. Like I am very energetic. I am very, sporty and athletic. And I can walk for 20 kilometers and maybe for like half a day, I could have like half a kilo down. And then the next day I'm the same. And it feels like, it's a lot harder to lose the weight. So tell us about what are some great measures or some commandments that a menopausal or perimenopausal woman should put in place to prevent all these issues or to combat them once they are installed?
Yes, all of your questions and issues and the concerns you have are totally on par with billions of other women. And what's so sad is they don't know that the other woman is thinking the same thing. And that's where our commonalities absolutely outweigh anything else. We're women. We're all pretty much going to go through the same thing because there are stages and phases of menopause. But for example, let's address the first thing that you had mentioned. I think one of the most disconcerting issues with perimenopause in particular is she's working out harder and she's trying, more breathy workouts with more load and whatever. And she's gaining fat. And that's because of estrogen. It changes the way that a lot of women get achy and painy when they start finding themselves into like menopause or later in perimenopause. And they don't realize the relationship between that achy, painy stuff they're feeling and their loss of muscle mass due to sarcopenia, which is just natural because of aging, and the loss of estrogen. We lose our ability to create muscle mass like we used to. That's how come you had the best results. It was so easy. It's because you were estrogen dominant. Remember, estrogen is the tend and befriend hormone. Women who are very estrogen dominant and are younger are very like, oh, I want to hold the baby. Hi, how are you? Not all, but many. And then as women get older, we got this reputation for being all cranky and stuff. That is absolutely due to estrogen because it also changes how you produce dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin in your gut, which makes you feel happy. So here's the bottom line. This is related to every single thing I talked about. The golden thread is sleep recovery. Norepinephrine is also referred to as the fat burning hormone. It's only active when your body is in deep sleep. So if you're wearing a device and you're like, I don't even know if I'm getting into deep sleep, so many of my clients aren't. So they're getting into REM sleep, but they're not getting into deep sleep. And that has a lot to do with hormone epinephrine, which is the fat burning hormone, because the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. Parasympathetic is rest and digest. And that's why I try to tell my clients and people all the time, listen, remember, exercise is the stimulus. Recovery is where the magic happens. And if you don't give yourself enough of that, you will not be able to do what you need to do. So women are freaking out. They're training more, i.e., not getting enough recovery. Two, they're training really hard. And we are already cortisol dominant. That's why she's waking up in the middle of the night. Or that's why she can't fall asleep. She doesn't know that. Something is triggering her sympathetic nervous system to release cortisol from her adrenal gland. I don't know what it is. Only she knows what it is. And she might not even know what it is. She might be like, I don't even know. That's why it's so important to practice meditation, perform mobility training, really change the way you approach exercise in this midlife phase, which is really hard for women because they're not being told that. And just from my own point of view, as a personal trainer for as many years as I've been one, and seeing women of this demographic working with, let's say, women who are younger as their personal trainer, not saying they're not educated and knowledgeable, but I would bet my bottom dollar that woman does not have the faintest clue what it feels like to go through perimenopause. Men, there's no possible way. They don't know what it feels like. So if you're going to hire somebody to help you change your lean mass, which is what needs to shift, we have to get away from workouts that are super breathy, you know, like that's the ones where you're like, oh my God, I'm killing myself and I'm gaining weight. You bet you are, because you are just creating more and more cortisol in your body. And cortisol is a hormone that's created when body's under stress. It is a carbohydrate sugar hound. That's all it wants to be fed. So you don't even maybe know it, but you're craving sugar, easy, simple sugars, carbohydrates, etc. And that weight is not going anywhere except to your midsection. It's a breakable cycle, but it is a cycle. It starts with sleep.
What can someone do to reduce cortisol? Because I find myself to be a lot more stressed than I used to be. But I would say from around 40 until, let's say, 44, you can say my stress levels have increased dramatically. And also my sleep, I would say that I would normally go to bed around 4 in the morning and then I would wake up at 12, okay? And now I got into a really good routine and my stress levels are down. I'm in a country with, you know, nice sun and I'm sleeping well. I'm going to bed at between 12 and 1 or 2. So I have dramatically optimized my sleep and I'm not so stressed and I feel the most beautiful I've ever felt, despite the fact that I'm like older. And I'm wondering, like, what can women do to get to this kind of level of calmness and sleeping well and feeling great and perhaps even a level of acceptance of their own bodies, regardless of how, you know, what their body looks like right now?
That is absolutely the key word, and it's acceptance. Realizing and not fighting against your new physiology with, well, I'm going to do this workout because I want to. Listen, let's just take that energy and redirect it to something that is absolutely going to make you get what you want. And that really just comes from the education. And it's entirely possible to get people, Lily, where you are, which I'm so glad that you found that sleep was a key. But it truly is, because it will set the pace for almost every other activity that happens in your life. So when I work with women who are in perimenopause, and by the way, you mentioned a time range, just in general, when you start your first menstrual flow, that's referred to as premenopause. Until you start noticing variations in your menstrual flow, which happens for women somewhere between, you know, late 30s for some women, most women around the mid 40s to early 50s. And perimenopause lasts between 2 and 8 years. And then once you have not had a menstrual flow for 12 consecutive months, that means no breakthrough bleeding, no Mount Gushmores, which is what I call in a very comical way. Once you experience one of your very last menstrual flows, just to be real, it will be memorable. That's all I'm going to say. It will be probably massive. You probably will not be prepared for it. You'll probably be wearing a white gown at a ball. That's why one of the things that I collect on my site, which is called Heard, and it's so women can come and be heard, because I'm not trying to be super disrespectful, but the gaslighting and the like pushing aside that women experience in particular in the United States, for sure, from the medical community is unacceptable. And that is why I exist, because so many of my clients don't have a clue what to do. And trust me, when I first started my journey, I didn't know what to do either, but I have learned strategies. And something that is really important, you mentioned sunlight where you live. There are a ton of supplements. Stress management comes from a lot of things. It comes from mind-body connection. It comes from movement that's, you know, you're not writing a grocery list while you're doing your workout. That demonstrates to me a non-mind-body connection, right? We want to try to get away from that. But with respect to like supplements, because there's a ton, and I don't endorse anything yet, I hope anyway, but there are so many that I would recommend to women to do some research on, like cortisol managers. It's generally found at grocery stores that sell, you know, health foods and supplements. And it will be a combination or a blend of herbs that will help you manage your cortisol levels. They work. Also, BCAs, so your branched chain amino acids, just those little caplets, because so many women, you know, they're trying to add lean mass, but they're not eating adequate amounts of amino acids in their diets. They're concerned with calories and carbs. I don't even use those words because they're not science. Both of those words are not scientific to me, so I can't wrap my brain around them. I'll talk to you about supplements and macronutrients, but you know, because that's science-based, and I think once women realize, wow, you know, there are some things, and with respect to exercise, there's just some tweaks that you have to make and you'll get much better results. I think this age in my life, I feel way more confident than I've ever felt in my entire life. It does not mean I know or have answers. I feel like I have less answers now than ever before, but it's a wonderful period or time of life. I just want to tell women, don't let yourself go.
Thank you. Tell us about what if, let's say, a woman doesn't do anything to kind of combat the effects of menopause. What could possibly go wrong? Like, imagine you don't take like any HRT therapy, like any particular supplements, or, you know, what could possibly go wrong there?
Well, it's all kind of like, I might've mentioned this before, but if I didn't, you know, when women get pregnant, there's a myriad of like symptoms and situations they might experience, but not every single woman experiences the same thing. It's the same with menopause. And I just have to tell you the truth, and this is helpful anyway. Earlier, you were saying, gosh, all of a sudden I'll be in the middle of a sentence and I'll forget what I'm saying. That just happened to me right now. I'm in the middle of a sentence with you, Lily, and all of a sudden I went, what was I talking about? I have fondly named those menopause moments. So I wanted to answer your question about what would women do if they did nothing. I think they become disheartened. I think they feel invisible. I think they feel like their issues or their problems don't matter, because menopause isn't a pause. It's literally a transformative period of your life. And if you don't take, you know, precautions, you know, medically speaking, it could be probably a bad time of life. You know, if you're not well, you can't move your own body through space without people assisting you, or you can't hear, or you can't see because you haven't taken care of your eyes and your hearing through whatever, you know, tests available. A lot of times women who enter menopause are like, I'm not going to have any pelvic exams anymore. Why would I need that? Oh, yes. Yes, you do. You still need all of those diagnostic type exams when you enter into menopause and beyond. You're going to be in menopause, most women, about 7 years. And like I said, it could be an amazing time of your life. You don't have to fill your face with Botox and injections and fillers. I don't care if you do. I think that's wonderful, but you don't have to do that. But you probably will need to understand that your risk factors for depression, anxiety, type 2 diabetes are significantly higher. So let's say she's been able to get away with a really bad diet for a while, cookies, cupcakes, ice cream all the time, Coke, pop, whatever. That's not going to fly when she gets into perimenopause. She will gain so much weight. And then, as you mentioned too, one of the symptoms is hair loss. I have extensions myself, of course. I love them. They're the new wig, in my opinion, especially for women in menopause. If marketing teams and manufacturers of things only knew what women in menopause and perimenopause would buy and pay for, I think they would change their strategies quite a bit. They have no idea what it is we're looking for because they don't have any pulse on what a woman over 40 needs. That's just my own opinion. I mean, we're looking for specific training that's strength-based. I don't want some 22-year-old male strength training me. He has no idea, no disrespect or, lack of knowledge of his experience, but no. So it's really important that if they want to take care of themselves, they're gonna have to try. Because if they don't, it's just a place that is, remember, menopause, estrogen down, cortisol levels up. And it's the tend and befriend hormone. So that is sometimes where your very horrible but typical maybe thing people say about grumpy old women, Yeah, and I don't want to feel like that.
Thank you. So do women in menopause and perimenopause, do they become a lot snappier and a little bit more masculine as well because of this hormonal imbalance?
Oh, Lily, your question is so good. I believe that based on the fact that most women, unless they're testosterone or estrogen dominant, which is so not very typical, but it does occur. I'm not a medical professional, but I am familiar with the lingo and kind of the conditions some of these women present in. Here's an example. Here's a woman I'm working with right now. She's in perimenopause. She's like, oh my gosh, Irene, my husband comes and gives me a hug, and it's the most wonderful thing in the world. And he's so happy. He walks away. He comes back 15 minutes later, and he's standing too close to me. I can feel him breathing on me. I want him to. I'm like, oh, welcome to hormones. Exactly. So we just are, women just tend to have more cognitive decline, which I hate even saying that, but it's completely true. And the tendency to be more empathetic is less. That's based on hormones. So thinking about, some women that are just lovely people, and no matter what, they're probably always going to be that way. And then you think about other women, because trust me, I'm an ally of all women, but I'm not friends with every woman. I'm not. But I get it. I get what women are going through. And some women, they're not happy. But you're the only one who can change that. And it's not as hard as you think. It's not, actually. Just takes a little bit of time, a little bit of discipline, a little bit of commitment. And voila, you're wearing a bikini. I'm not promising anything, but a lot of women are like, I cannot believe I'm in Cabo San Lucas and I'm wearing a bikini. I don't look like a centerfold or anything or some Vogue model, but I feel so good in my skin. That's the magic.
Thank you. So tell us, how can a menopausal woman feel like a Kim Kardashian reinvented or her own version of her ideal body?
Well, I'm going to tell you that strength training is magical. And we need, this is so many women are, I'll give you my formula because this, when women learn this, they're like, oh my God, the intimidation factor is gone. And they're like, I could do that at home. Yes. So you know how women are always encouraged to lift heavier? I've been an exercise physiologist training women for over 30 years. I don't know very many women, experienced or not, who know what that means. They're not supposed to know what that means necessarily. I go get my engine and my car repaired. I don't know what they're talking about. I just say, yes, make it work. Right? So these women, they're not dumb. They just don't know what to do. So they've been doing cardio forever. That's always been their go-to. They'll spend an hour on a treadmill. It's not going to work anymore because all the metabolic reactions that happen in her body occur in her lean mass. Nothing happens in fat. It's just storage. That's all it is. Sitting there getting dusty. And it'll keep growing and growing and growing as long as there's not any lean mass for the ingestion of macronutrients, foods of whatever types, to be utilized as energy. That's basically the bottom line. It's sort of that simple, but it's not that simple because when you have hormones in the mix and you have genetics in the mix, you're going to get a different result. My goal is to get her the best result. So the key is strength training. She's scared to strength train. She doesn't even know what that means. All right, let's start with something really simple, dumbbells. What do you have at your house? I'm just giving you a rhetorical conversation. Oh, I've got some fives. I think I've got like maybe a 10, and my husband might have like a 12. Fabulous. All I need you to do is grab those two fives. Now remember, two fives equals how many pounds? 10 pounds. Okay. So you can absolutely pick up two fives and one 10, right? Yeah. Okay. Pretty soon I've got this girl holding two 15s and a 25. You only need one heavy weight. Why use two when one will do? Especially because a woman's like, well, I'm supposed to be picking up 20s. Picking up two 20s, that's like picking up a 40. It's way too much for most women who are trying to lift and be like successful at it. You just have to have a load that's heavy enough to create a fatigue response. Now, my clients are like, oh my God, I hate you. And you know when they say that to me the most? Third set. We already are doing some, you know, very doable. It does not have to be complex. That's the worst thing, because complexity pulls away from the intensity. The more simple and approachable it is, the more my clients have to maintain a consistent intensity. And they, guess what, Lily? They hate that. They love to hate that. And then I say third round and they're like, oh my God, you're the devil. But see, the thing is that the American College of Sports Medicine's research, which has not been refuted for dozens of years, one set of resistance overload to a muscle group will create a dynamic response. But three sets or more are required to see a change. Most people do not lift heavy enough, and the volume, that's what that's called, the heaviness of it and how much they do, is way too low. That's why they don't get the results that they want. So for example, my clients, they know what to do. A lot of them, some of them don't, but some of them like, yeah, I know what to do. They need me to make them do it. That's why I'm there. And they're like, oh my gosh. But it's incredible to see these women who were fat and were gaining a lot of fat, losing muscle in their legs. A lot of women lose muscle when they enter perimenopause in their legs, and they actually think they're getting thinner. See the perception, the whole paradigm. They're like, oh my God, I'm losing weight in my legs. No, no. That's one of your best areas to maintain lean mass. So let's not lose that mass in our legs. Let's get rid of that fat because estrogen leaves. This is why there's so many pharmaceutical drugs right now available to women in menopause for type 2 diabetes, because we become less insulin sensitive. Our sensitivity to insulin decreases. So it's a terrible cycle for fat gain. That's why strength training is so important, because if she doesn't have muscle, in order for metabolic reactions to take place, for example, insulin to bring sugar into the muscle has to be escorted in. Sugar will not go into a muscle cell unless insulin is there to escort it. And that's what it means to be insensitive to insulin. It means you've got a lot of sugar rolling around in your bloodstream, but you don't have any way to get it into your muscle cells, because you need it in your muscle cells if you're going to use it for a workout. And that's how we gain fat. It's like, well, I guess I'll just go find another place to rest. And then there it is. That's why insulin is important. Yeah.
So like what I find quite funny, okay, is that I'm not a gym girl. Like I don't think you'll ever catch me in a gym in the next, you know, and well, you haven't caught me in a gym in the last few years. But one thing that I did do is like I went, I would say maybe three times to the gym, and I did some leg weights and some light weights as well. What I noticed was that despite the fact that, for example, I was swimming a lot and I was walking and I was dancing, it's like when I was depressed, I found it really hard to kind of really shake that off. But when I did the weights, and despite the fact that I can't say that I enjoyed it, okay? But when I started doing it, I just felt like this rush of adrenaline, and I felt so much better. And I can swear that day I was not depressed. Like I felt so much better. And also, like, I just started getting so many ideas that I actually had to have my phone next to me to kind of write down what I wanted to do and all these kind of things. And so I do think that lifting weights seems to work, although I haven't kind of practiced it since. And I'm wondering about what kind of exercises do you recommend most menopausal women to do so they can get rid of the fat around their tummy, for example?
You bet. You have great questions. I love those. Thank you so much. There is so much research about exercise and depression and anxiety management. So you're absolutely experiencing a true phenomenon because when you strength train, remember you said you didn't enjoy it? Remember? Nobody does, really. I mean, if they do, if people are like, oh, I mean, I am not positive they're not. There's a spectrum, right? Okay. And we want, I mean, ideally, most people fall here, but there are people who will never move, and there are people who will wrap their whole life around their movement plans for the day. So, yes, strength training and movement. I don't know necessarily exactly if there's only one reason why, but I know for a fact that the movement and the connectivity of the mind and the body as you're, because you know, when you strength train, the first thing you have is a neural effect. That's one. All the stuff people talk about muscle memory, that's what they're talking about. They don't really, it doesn't really mean what they think it means because there's no memory in your actual muscles. It's all in your brain, but that's where, you know, the neurons, you know, get all their information from. So the neural connection, I think, is where you get the increase in dopamine and serotonin. And those are all made in the gut. That's why it's so important that women eat food and they don't just drink coffee or have carbs in the morning. There's a lot of strategies they're going to figure out. They're like, oh, that's me. I get up, I'm rushing out the door. Okay, your cortisol levels are already on high. So everything you eat now is going to be, cortisol is high, then everything you ingest is going to go to fat. Everything, everything. Because it's the dominant hormone. That's what your body's responding to, the command center. Hormones have massive command over our bodies, more so than people think. So there's a few strategies in the morning. Start your day with some water. I totally get coffee. I completely enjoy it myself. But, you know, just 8 to 12 minutes of just some movement. And I don't mean marching in place or anything, just some stretches or some, you know, some hinges or some drop your head below your heart level and get some blood flow there and take some deep breaths. Try to give yourself enough time in the morning that you're not rushing out the door because that will set you up. That will absolutely set you up for the anxiety. Coming from a genetic background of massive amounts of anxiety and depression in my family history, I mean, it's just something I've known that I've had to manage my whole life. So I take my SSRIs. That's completely fine. But that's what I want people to really understand is explore what your needs are and don't let people. I mean, at least I would encourage them, you know, people like, oh, don't take antidepressant medication. That's bad. Well, who's to say that that's bad? Maybe that's important for her. Let her decide that that's what she wants to do, or HRT or whatever, because I really believe in hormone replacement therapy. I may not be correct, but I do think I'm right. However, the exercises, I absolutely get it when you're like, I don't really enjoy it. Nobody does. Nobody does. You're not alone. My clients are like, hi, they're so lovely because I only train virtual. I have clients all over the US from coast to coast. And they're lovely, but they keep coming back because of our connection. I entertain them and I educate them. And I've had more than a four of them or five of them tell me I'm so much more particular about the kind of exercise that I do now because I've learned so much about precision and movement and why you need to do this when you do that and how to stay safe and not get hurt. Over-exercising, I guarantee you, it's a prescription for an injury. And that is the worst thing. One of that you can get in menopause or perimenopause because you can't exercise. So here's a couple shifts, Lily, that I think women who want to know, all right, Irene, what do we do then? One is You have to decrease your anaerobic training. If she's a woman who's used to like running and getting really breathy and her cardio is real strong, I know it probably will hurt her feelings and she'll be like, but I love doing that because I'm really good at it. It's not what you need to do. You don't need the anaerobic training in that capacity. You only need to be breathy a little bit. So we're going to pull back that anaerobic type training just to a couple times a week for just a few minutes. That is all your cardiovascular system needs. And she needs to drop herself right back into that, what I refer to as the 1980s, because that's when I kind of grew up and everything was aerobics, 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 aerobics. But she needs to use fat as an energy source. And in our muscle cells, we have these little modules or these organelles, they're called mitochondria. In fact, some people take supplements just to keep their mitochondria strong. You can grow more mitochondria through aerobic activity. And that's basically the powerhouse of your muscle cell. Remember when I was saying that insulin has to escort sugar into the muscle cell? Well, guess what the mitochondria is gonna do? It's gonna eat that sugar. And if it doesn't have it inside the muscle cell, and the only way it's going to get it in the muscle cell, if insulin is able to bring it in, and insulin won't be present if you're anaerobic. That's the chemical structure of the whole workout. And that is why I'm like, okay, ladies, you need to work out with a trainer who understands the science. I don't need them to understand the science. I just need them to understand that I do. So they will get results-based training. I can't believe the way some of my clients look. So aerobic activity, the American College of Sports Medicine, that's ACSM, say that a healthy adult needs to acquire about 150 minutes a week. That's 20 minutes 7 days a week. That is 45 minutes, 4 to 5 days a week, something like that, of aerobic activity. Oh, Lily, I guarantee if half of the United States of America would just follow that one guideline, we would not have an obesity epidemic. Most people do not follow that guideline. I mean, that's like taking a walk for, 45 minutes. Now, and so I know women and I meet them like, but I do that, Irene. I do a lot of walking. I'm like, okay, now tell me about your strength training and your resistance training. And now I get, silence because they don't do that. I'm like, all right, that's going to be our next strategy. And the muscles that we want to train are the big muscles. You know what, Lily? I don't do lunges. They're called sagittal plane lunges. I don't necessarily expect people to understand that, but they're the ones where you like walk forward, like maybe with weights in your hands or something. Excuse me, apologize already for this. Hell no. Absolutely no way, contraindicated, no way for women in perimenopause or beyond. Our joints at the ankle, knee, and hip, it's called the triple extension connection, are so vulnerable to injury. And women at that point don't necessarily always, some do, but most of them don't have the muscles to manage the joints. So the risk of injury is so high. I also don't do squats. I don't do any squats. My clients don't. Now, don't think that we don't put our body into a squat position, but you're not going to just like hold your hands here and like drop your hips down and up 100 times in a workout with me. No way. I would never waste your time like that. I wouldn't do it. But Irene, you might think, I see that in like fitness classes and stuff. No disrespect, but they're not doing, those fitness professionals are not doing what they think they're doing. Because the body just doesn't work like that. They don't understand the physiology. They just don't. So I would recommend plié squats, lots of them. Toes turned out. Knee and ankle alignment is perfect. I would hold on to one heavy and just focus on that. That is an awesome lower body move. You've got so much quad engagement and lots of glute. You can even rise up onto your toes so your heels are lifted and your calves get engaged. There's a ton of ways you can deliver that. Remember, 3 sets or more. So if you want to, let's say this is called boring. You do a set of 10 of the plié squat, holding onto the heavy weight. Take a breather, take a sip of water, do another set of 10, take a breather, sip of water, do another set of 10. You just met your requirement right there for your lower body today. It's a great movement, but the load has to be heavy enough. Body weight is good, but it's not usually heavy enough. Not unless you weigh about 400 pounds. Somebody who weighs a lot, they're going to work a lot harder because they have to pull a lot more weight through space than somebody who weighs a lot less. So as a trainer, I have to consider that as well when I'm helping clients choose load. Back. Oh, the lats, Lily. Lats. So low rows. Deadlifts, the posterior kinetic chain is what we really want to focus on. So gluteus maximus, latissimus dorsi, posterior deltoid, the whole entire tricep, the entire backside. So I do a lot of deadlifts and hinges. That means I've got to teach people how to move very precisely or they're going to get hurt. And I'm just so happy because I'm only one person and I'm doing what I can, you know, but I'm just pleased that my clients, I've had clients with me for years. I mean, they've been virtual with me since we had to make the pivot at the pandemic. And it's awesome because it wasn't at all a thing. And you know, now it's not that uncommon to be training clients virtually. But yes, chest and anterior deltoid, which is an area of the body. A lot of times women hold fat here. It's just the front of your shoulder. When we do train, I really make sure they understand the shoulder. This is the front of your shoulder. This is your collarbone. This is your shoulder joint. And then in the back, you've got your scapula. That's the back of your shoulder. All of those have to be managed anytime you do a shoulder exercise. And this is why, and again, this is just me. Doesn't mean I'm right. I just think I am. I don't do upright rows. You know how people hold on to weight and pull? No. That movement comes from what's called a ground press. And if you're going to do it, you're going to do it with one arm only. Otherwise, you're going to get hurt. You're not going to get the results that you want. Tricep kickbacks for women. I'll do a few of them with them, but mostly we do straight arm. I don't do the bent arm very often. I do it, but because I want balance in the muscle. But we mostly, when we do tricep stuff, we press back like that. And women are like, oh my God, I've never done a tricep press like that. I'm like, just wait till you see the back of your arm. And remember, it takes about at least 8 weeks of consistent training. So that's 2 to 3 times a week of strength training. And remember, you don't need more than 30 minutes. If you're spending, you know, an hour and a half strength training, you're probably spending time in areas you don't need to spend time. You got to hit it quick and dirty. That's what I call it. I call the workouts quick and dirty 30, and they're just strength workouts. And then I ask my clients, you manage your 150 minutes of aerobic activity however you want to. So if you want to go to a bar class, or if you want to do walking, or you want to do swimming, or take an aquatic exercise class, just as long as you maintain a consistent heart rate and you can collect 150 minutes in a 7-day period, you are going to lose fat. Yes.
Thank you. So tell us, why do some exercises cause injury? Like, for example, when you were explaining the squats, why do they have to be plié and not the general ones that people tend to do? And what other exercises lead to injury and why?
Oh, I love those. There's a lot. And the reason, and I know there are probably people, if they listen to this, they're going to be like, she's crazy. What is she talking about? Well, unless those squats are very carefully monitored and coached, most people, one, do not load enough so that they don't really get what they think they're doing. Two, they do not have the right biomechanics, so they're not able to maintain a relatively, so let's say this is like your leg, that's from your knee down to your ankle. Their knees will come out like this and they'll like sit back and down. And now all the load of all the work is everything's in a joint. And they're like, yeah, it's so hard. I'm doing it right because I'm killing myself and it feels so hard. Intensity does not equate efficiency. Not even close. In fact, the more intense the work is, I call it the quieter it is. I call them silent and deadly movements. I literally have clients that go, oh my God, Irene, this is insane. I had no idea this was going to be so hard. Are we on round 3 yet? Yes. They're going to be able to do everything I prescribe and give them to do, but it's hard. And it's not stuff you would do unless somebody was standing there going, okay, you need to do this. So The plié, I like it because you engage so many more muscles. And because of that open foot position with that turnout, her base of support is bigger, so she can stabilize more load. Now, as long as I can keep her vertical and push her through that range of motion while she maintains that vertical, like ear, shoulder, hip alignment position, she is going to have quads that are going to be on fire. Her adductors, there are five of them. They're all going to contribute to the work. And she's going to see changes in how her muscles look and function so much sooner than she would if she just loaded, weights on her shoulders or hung them by her side. I still do like a suitcase squat, kind of a traditional squat. But guess what? You're going to hold on to one heavy weight. So you have a whole neural response to that load. And it's hard because it's precise and it's not fast. We commit to every position. So if you're going to go plank, downward facing dog, back to plank, knees down, tricep pushup, back to plank, I expect to see you in every single one of those positions. And that's how I will coach it. You don't get to skip it. Sometimes moving faster makes the move a little bit easier. No. And that's why I'm there. So I can go, all right, let's commit to the plank. Hold on. Another thing I do as a trainer as well is I don't start counting the reps until I see the one I like. And once I see her managing the exercise the way I want her to, I will say 8, 7, 6. Now, I'm not going to lie, this makes some women really upset. They're like, that's not fair. I actually did 16. I'm like, well, you did. That's very true. And I apologize if this upset you, but I don't actually start counting until I see the ones I like. So let's make sure we communicate so you're in the right position, because I don't want you wasting time doing moves that are not correct for you, because you'll find out yourself in that place and I don't want you to be frustrated. And they're like, oh, see, these are all different ways to train than ways we've trained. Okay, there's a lady, I know a lady. She's in her early 60s. She does aerobic activity. She was in her kitchen and she sort of tripped. She did not fall to the floor, but she sort of tripped on a carpet and fell and like landed on like a countertop. She broke two ribs and her sternum. Osteopenia. That's where it rears its ugly head. In bones and muscles, especially if you don't like cardio, you can like stomp the floor and make the bones in your lower body a little bit stronger, But what are you going to do about your upper body? And that is why I have my clients do flies and chest press. Not a lot of them, because our wrist joints in particular get real sensitive when estrogen exits the room. But that is why I'm not trying to build, chest muscles. I'm trying to decrease their risk factor for fractures in the sculpture. They
Thank
don't know.
Tell us where women can connect with you.
Oh. I, first of all, am so lovely. It's so lovely to talk to you. I think earlier you had mentioned something. You're like, I've gained weight. You are gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. And your accent is so lovely too. I don't know what country you hail from, but I just think that it's just amazing. So don't ever, ever think, oh, I've gained weight, da da da. You are, Trent, you're just moving through whatever phase, and you can transition right out of that phase when you're ready to. I have a group, it's a community, and it's on a platform called school.com, and it's a K, Skool. And the group that my partner and I created is called HERD, HER apostrophe D, because women in perimenopause in particular, the biggest complaint they have is they just don't feel heard. And we hear them. So we are going to approach perimenopause and beyond with humor and research and science, a community of like-minded women that are going to be there, no matter what. They're not, what are you going to do? Talk to your male physician about, no. I mean, yes, do, because they're medical professionals, but they're just not probably going to have the solutions that you're looking for.
Thank you.
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.